All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're going to do something a little bit different this evening. Although we normally reserve this slot for the Parsha Shir in the evenings, but being that tomorrow is Yom HaShoah, so I wanted to focus a little bit on an interesting theme, a theme that runs between the lives of great people, but we'll see focusing much more primarily on the works of the Piagetsna. But I want to begin with a little bit of a word of introduction. You know, what's interesting to note is Yom HaShoah in the Orthodox community always presents a very interesting concept. Because at the end of the day, we have a day in which we mark tragedies, and that's Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the day when we mourn every single national tragedy. We mourn every tragedy for the last 2,000 years, from the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the First Temple, the Second Temple, and every subsequent catastrophe. So this is not a history lesson, but with the establishment of Yom HaShoah, the establishment of Yom HaShoah generated an incredible amount of controversy for a variety of different reasons. Number one, because we already have a day of mourning, a day of Tisha B'Av. Number two, also because Yom HaShoah was established during the month of Nisan. And Nisan, we know the halacha is that we do not really engage in formal or communal mourning practices on the month of Nisan. So we don't recite Kel Mali Rachamims, we don't recite Tachnun, which is a supplicatory prayer. Funerals which happen during the month of Nisan are fundamentally different than funerals during the rest of the year. So you put all of this together, Yom HaShoah kind of created a little bit of a quandary for the Orthodox community. So on Tisha B'Av every year, when we focus on Kinnis Halavai, we shouldn't have to do it this coming year, but on Tisha B'Av, we here in the shul, we focus an incredible amount on the Holocaust. And the truth is, being it that it's a Churban that occurred less than 100 years ago, and it's a Churban that unfortunately, it's a catastrophe that unfortunately is being very quickly forgotten, we have an obligation to remember, an obligation to mourn that loss. But my feeling is often like this. Even if you don't identify with Yom HaShoah, and even if you, all the various halachic issues which are associated with it, which are real issues, one thing you have to bear in mind, which is, if greater society is commemorating the 6 million, we must commemorate the 6 million as well. It doesn't make sense that there are people who are mourning such a catastrophic loss of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people themselves, or segments of the Jewish people, are not marking it. And so that's why I felt it important for us to dedicate this shir tonight, focusing, really dedicating our learning in the zechus of the 6 million kedoshim, the 6 million men, women, and children who were barbarically murdered by the Nazis in Machshama Bezichram. And the goal tonight is not to recount the horrors of the war. It's not to recount the horrors of the Holocaust. That, again, we do much more on Tisha B'Av. Instead, what I want to show you is through some of the works of great people, an incredible inspirational narrative that emerges from the darkest of times. And we dedicate our learning tonight, as we said before, Le'ilui Nishmas, in memory of the 6 million. In the memory, some of you may know that the Kalev Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Menachem Mendel Taub, whose picture here is the second picture on the page, passed away this past week. The Kalev Rebbe was an incredible tzaddik. I had the great privilege to meet him when I learned in Eretz Yisrael. And he was an exceptional man. He was himself experimented on by Dr. Mengele, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, and as such, again, didn't have a beard, didn't have children. Who knows what that Russia did to him. But he was a man who rebuilt not just his Hasidus, but rebuilt so many parts of the Jewish world after those dark years, and a man who was committed ultimately to preserving the legacy of the 6 million. We also dedicate our learning, the third picture on the page is Lori Gilbert Kay, Zichron Livracha, Shem Yikom Dama, who was killed in the attack in Chabad in California this past Shabbos. Again, it's amazing to see how the Karbanos of Klal Yisrael, the offerings that we must offer up on the altar of martyrdom, do not stop. And we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides her neshama with an aliyah and her family in a chama. But tonight, what we're really going to focus on are the writings and the works of the man of the first picture over here. This is a picture of the Piagetsna Rebbe, Rav Klono Miskalma Shapira. And just to give you a little bit of background of the Piagetsna, Rav Klono Miskalma Shapira is born 1889 and dies in 1943. He was born in Grodzisk, Poland. His father was the Imre Elimelech. At the age of 3, the Piagetsna was orphaned by his father passed away. I'm giving you just a very abridged biography here. 1905, he marries his wife, Rachel Chaya Miriam, and together they have two children, a son and a daughter. A son by the name of Elimelech Ben Sion, a daughter by the name of Rachel Yehudis. In 1909, he is appointed to be the Rebbe of Piazetzna. So you could see already, 1909, he's 20 years old. He's 20 years old, appointed as a Hasidic Rebbe. So first of all, this tells you a lot about who he was. He was an outstanding scholar. And outstanding, interestingly enough, he also had incredible musical talent, which is quite amazing. In 1909, he's appointed as Rebbe of Piazetzna. 1939, the Germans invade Poland. And the Rebbe is sent with his Hasidim to the Warsaw Ghetto. Warsaw is about 20 kilometers from Piazetzna. We're going to discuss what happens to his children there. The Rebbe is killed near Lublin in 1943. The Rebbe dies al Kiddush Hashem, murdered by the Nazis in Machshon Bezichram in Tarniki, together with the remaining Jews there. What I want to share with you tonight, are some of the teachings from the Piazetzna. As many of you know the story, the Piazetzna used to give a drasha on Shabbosos in the Warsaw Ghetto. Not every Shabbos, and we'll discuss some of the history behind some of the drashos, but he used to give a drasha on the Shabbos. And who could imagine, again, this was the congregation of the brokenhearted, but every week when circumstances allowed, he would go ahead and give a drasha. After Shabbos, someone recorded the drasha. It's a little bit of historical debate if the Piazetzna, if the Rebbe himself wrote down the drasha, or if he had a gabbai write down the drasha. Someone wrote down the drasha after Shabbos, preserving it. And when it was clear that they were not going to make it out of the ghetto, the Rebbe instructed that they be put in a milk canister and buried in the Warsaw Ghetto. After the war, this is 1946, there's a Polish peasant going through the rubble of the Warsaw Ghetto, and he finds this milk canister with a seal on it, and the seal has Hebrew. He turns it over, essentially, to the Jewish committee there that was there in Warsaw, Poland. They send it over, they open it up, they see a letter, and with the Piazetzna instructed the canister and its contents to be transferred. He had an uncle in Tel Aviv. It's sent to Eretz Yisrael, and the Rebbe's writings were preserved. They were put together in a sefer that was titled Ish Kodesh, the Holy Fire. The Rebbe did not title that sefer. He didn't title it at all. He did not know what was going to happen, but when it was compiled, it became known as Ish Kodesh. The Ish Kodesh, the sefer Ish Kodesh, contains the Rebbe's drushes from between 1939 to 1942. It's 3 years worth of drushos from the Warsaw Ghetto. Again, not every Shabbos and not every Yom Tov. Different things were happening at different times. But what's amazing about these drushos are twofold. Number one, as we're going to see, they provide us with a little bit of an insight as to what was happening in the ghetto at these times. Very, very important. And number two, I will tell you that if you were being sent to a desert island and they told you you could only take one sefer with you, request a copy of the Eish Kodesh. Because the drushos that the Rebbe has over here are profound on many different levels. They, first of all, again, contain the most incredible optimism and hope. The drushos themselves change themes. In 1939, 1940, even beginning of 1941, the Rebbe is very optimistic that everyone is going to survive, we're going to get through this. Already, bless you, at the end of 1941, 1942, it's clear the Rebbe feels that they are not going to survive. And so the theme switches to one of acceptance of their fate of dying al Kiddush Hashem, of dying for the sanctification of God's name. But even then, it's not morose. It sounds strange. How could it not be morose? Even then, the Rebbe frames it in an optimistic type of way. The Piazetzna was a dramatic, once in a universe type of personality. And when you read his writings, you see, first of all, what true leadership is. You see the power of Jewish hope and Jewish optimism, and you see the power of holding on to our religion, holding on to our spirituality. And it's incredibly important because it gives us something. You know, it's interesting that, you know, there are a lot of mantras that surround the Holocaust. Never forget, you know, never forget, never again. Okay. Good, never forget. That's not a new one. We already have that by Amalek, right? Never again. Of course, we hope with all of our hearts, never again. But it's more than never forget and never again. It's how do we grow from it? As Jews, you have to grow from everything. We grow from simcha and we grow from tsara. We grow from every single circumstance. So to say we're not going to forget, okay, that's important, but I'm going to remember it for what purpose? What do I learn from it? What do I get from it? You know, I will tell you just why you see this is also important, that I spoke at a Holocaust program before Pesach, and it was very interesting I forgot the exact title of the program, but it had in there, never forget, but forgive. Never forget, but forgive. And it was amazing to me to see that somehow, you know, there was this theme that was being advanced that we have to learn to forgive. We have to learn to forgive. We have to learn to let go. We have to learn. We should remember, but we should forgive. I don't know who came up with that theme. I don't know whose idea that was. To me, it seems a bit blasphemous. I have no right to forgive anyone for the murder of my family. That's not my family. Those neshamas have the right to forgive. It's not my place to forgive or not to forgive. But at the same time, my goal or my job is not to foster animosity either. My goal, my job, is to grow. How do I grow as a result of this horrific tragedy? How do we grow as a result of a tragedy which claimed 6 million lives and forever altered the trajectory of the Jewish people? To just go ahead and remember is a good start. To never forget is a good start. But the goal is to grow. And I think as you're going to see from the words of the Piagetsna, not only do we remember, not only do we pledge not to forget, but we can actually find a way to grow from all of this pain. Take a look at number one. So what I want to share with you tonight are three short sections from the Eish Kodesh. All of these sections are taken from 1939 and 1940, the beginning of the Piagetsna's time in the ghetto. So if you take a look, this is a section from Parshas Chayisara. And you're going to see why each of these are so dramatically amazing. V'hinei Rashi Perish, V'lama Nismecha Misas Sar La'Kedas Yitzchak. So Rashi points out the juxtaposition between the end of Vayera, which contains Akedas Yitzchak, and Chayisara, which is the death of Sarah Imenu. Why are these two sections juxtaposed? Sha'al Yidei Besuras Ha'Akedas Shenizdamin B'no L'Shchita, Kimachlo Nishchat Parcha Nishmasa Mimenu Umesa. This is absolutely amazing. So remember again, we're familiar with this idea, which is that the juxtaposition ultimately of Akedas Yitzchak and the death of Sarah is because Sarah dies as a result of the Akedah. Now this, we know this Medrash, right? This is an incredible idea. We often think that Sarah died as a result of the Akedah because she heard that Yitzchak was killed. But in fact, that's not the case. Sarah knew that Yitzchak was totally fine. She knew he was fine, he survived. But yet she died as a result of the shock. She died as a result of recognizing how close to death her son was. And the Piagetsna says something amazing. Haynu Shemoshe Rabinu Raya Mehemna. Samach Misas Sar Lakidas Yitzchak. Moshe Rabinu purposely juxtaposed. He purposely put together the death of Sarah and Akedas Yitzchak. Paragraph Beis. Kedei Lahamlitz Tov Ba'adenu. Ulaharos. Sha'al yidei yisurin chas v'chalila yosir midai ma'na'asa she'parcha nishmasa. Listen to these words. I'll explain them in just a moment. Va'od. Bimna'asa kein besara tzadekes gedola kizu she'baskuf kibaskuf l'cheit v'chein shnei chaya sara u'mikamakum lo yichla lispo yisurim kashu mikosh kein anachnu. Says Rebbe, do you know what we learn from this? You know, people often say, God never gives you a challenge you cannot handle. The Piagetsna says, I beg to differ. I beg to differ. Sometimes the challenges of life become so overwhelming that you cannot handle them anymore. Sometimes, again, you just simply run out of the ability to muster up the necessary emotional energy to meet your challenges. Says the Piagetsna. Now, what's the proof to that? The proof to that is Sar Imenu. Sar Imenu hears about this traumatic and dramatic situation, and what's her response? What's her response? She dies. She can't take it. She can't. It says Piagetsna. So what's the message? The message is Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, be careful how you treat your children, because they have a breaking point. You think, God, we can handle a lot more than we really can, but the truth is, there comes a certain point in time for all of us where we break. We can handle a lot. We can deal with a lot. But if there's too much placed on the heart, if there's too much placed on the soul, we break. If Sari Imenu broke, then we could break as well. Look at paragraph Gimel. Odef Shalomer Shekam Sari Imenu Atzma Shenasna Kol Kach Aliba Masa Akeda At Sheparcha Nishmasa L'Tovas Yisrael Asta. The Piagetzni here employing a little bit of literary license explains so profoundly that Sari Imenu, he posits, could have lived past this shock. But she was trying to do something good for Klal Yisrael. Her death shows that a person could only tolerate so much pain. That a person could only withstand so much heartbreak. At a certain point in time, I simply cannot do it anymore. At a certain point in time, I cannot handle anymore, and I break. So understand, who is the Piagetzna speaking to? Right? He's speaking literally to the congregation of the brokenhearted. He's speaking to people. Remember, this is October or November in 1939. Their world is coming crashing down all around them. And almost in a veiled way, what the Piagetzna is saying is, Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't put too much more on us, because we don't even know what we could handle. If Sari Imenu could break, then we could break. There's an incredible book that came out a couple of years ago called Torah from the Years of Wrath, written by Henry Abramson. What Dr. Abramson did, I think it's Dr. Rabbi, he did is he put the Esh Kodesh in a historical context. So what he did was, this is amazing. He took almost every single one of the drushes of the Piagetzna and tells you what was happening in the ghetto at that time. And when you understand what was happening in the ghetto, the Rebbe's drushas become even more impactful. So watch this. Look at number two. This is Cheshvan 5700, October 14th. No entries were recorded in Torah from the Years of Wrath for 6 weeks. Then on November 4th, the Rebbe broke his public silence with a sermon on the weekly Torah reading of Chayi Sarah, which begins with the death of the matriarch Sarah. So this is amazing. The drusha I just quoted to you in number one, which is a drusha from October in 1939, came after 6 weeks of silence. The Rebbe did not give one drusha for 6 weeks. What happened? This is amazing. Until this point, the Rebbe's message of consolation, his appeal for strength and renewed commitment to Jewish spirituality, are well understood as conventional expressions of pastoral sentiment. The survivors might receive comfort from the notion that their loved ones, as martyrs, felt no pain in their last moments. Within days, however, tragedy struck the Rebbe in the most personal of ways, and he was forced to confront the suffering of his Hasidim in an immediate manner within his own family. The bombing assault continued, and on the morning of September 25th, 2 days after Yom Kippur, a shell fragment flew through a window and grievously wounded the Rebbe's only son, Ben Sion Elimelech. The Rebbe and some of his followers carried him through a fusillade of bombs from one hospital to another, desperate to secure medical treatment for the young man, bleeding profusely from the injury. He was eventually admitted to a hospital, leaving his wife, father, and sister-in-law outside at the entrance, reciting psalms for his recovery throughout that terrible night. As morning broke, the Rebbe left them to go to the private home of a doctor to seek his assistance. While he was away, Nazi planes disgorged another deadly load immediately over the hospital entrance, killing the Rebbe's sister-in-law, Chana Heston, his daughter-in-law, Gittel. His son died of his wounds 4 days later. So understand that within one bombardment, the Rebbe lost his sister, his son, and his daughter-in-law. His wife had actually already passed away before the war, and his mother had passed away a few days earlier. So within the scope of a few days, the Rebbe lost his entire family. One daughter, I should say, Rachel Yehudis, was still alive. A contemporary account published in the American Yiddish paper describes the Rebbe's reaction. For a time, the Hasidim were with the Rebbe thought he would collapse, though this lasted only a moment. The Rebbe composed himself, recited the verse, "The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Hashem nasan, Hashem lakach, yihi shem Hashem avarach," and directed that the deceased be taken to the cemetery for a eulogy and burial. The Rebbe was silent for a month. No entries for the weeks after the death of his sons are recorded in the Torah for the Years of Wrath. The Rebbe did, however, record his anguish in Tzav Vezeres, his personal spiritual journal, which also survived the war. The Rebbe wrote a diary, wrote a journal. And this is an excerpt from his journal.
Now I sit still and silent. The intensity of pain is beyond bearing. I am broken beyond repair. It was decreed in heaven, a harsh decree, a very, turn the page, bitter one, to take him from me in 5700 at the outbreak of the war. On the 12th of Tishrei, during the bombing, he was mortally wounded. He was standing near me. A few days later, on the second day of Sukkot, the 16th of Tishrei, he returned his pure and holy soul to his Maker. Also at that time, my daughter-in-law, his wife, was killed while standing outside the hospital. That was on the 13th of Tishrei. Her name was Gittel, daughter of Rabbi Shlomo Chaim of Balakov. All hope for myself and my soul, both in this world and the next, was absorbed with their premature deaths. With their premature deaths. And my own future in them through their continuous spiritual growth was also destroyed for me. This tragedy is too great to bear. Only you, God, could sustain and encourage me with your wonders. Please, God, have pity on a poor Jew like me. Have mercy on me, Father and Master. Listen to the petition of my heart, which wallows in pain and sorrow. So now you understand the context. This was 6 weeks before Chayei Sara, where the Rebbe lost everything. The drasha you saw, the excerpt you saw in Parshas Chayei Sara, was the first drasha the Rebbe delivered after the death of his daughter, his sister, his son, and his daughter-in-law. And now you begin to understand the context. What was the Rebbe saying? Ribono shel Olam, if Sara Imenu could die because it was too much to bear, if Sara Imenu parcha nishmasa, her soul could leave her body simply because there is too much pain, if Sara Imenu can break, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please take care of us. Because if our great matriarch can break, then we can break as well. Coming from a man who felt himself on the verge of breaking. And then the Rebbe goes on. Take a look at number 3. This is from the next week. Parashas Toldos. Same year. A week later, Parashas Toldos. See, here the Rebbe says something so beautiful. O Defsha. Now again, all of these drushas that I'm quoting to you are much longer than what I'm quoting. I'm giving you just snippets of it. Od Efshar, ki apasik omer, uba ovdin be'eretz asher, vanidachem be'eretz Yisrael. The pasik in Yeshaya says, the ones who are lost, uba ovdin be'eretz asher, the ones who are lost will come from Asher, from Assyria, vanidachem be'eretz Yisrael, and the exiled ones from Egypt. So remember again, this pasik in Isaiah, this verse in Yeshaya, is talking about messianic redemption. And when a Mashiach comes, all those who were dispersed will be ingathered. Now, what the Rebbe points out over here is there are two different groups of exiles. There are Ovdim, those who are lost, and Nidachim, those who are exiled, or those who are sent away. Sheyeshnam bechinas Ovdim ubechinas Nidachim. What's the difference between an Oved, someone who is lost, and someone who is exiled, pushed away? Nidach, hu sherak nidach mimkom lamakom rachok. Aval nikar, Venirahu. A nidach, someone who is cast away, exiled, is just in a different location, but he is still recognizable. Namely what? When you are a nidach, your identity is intact. It's your geography which has been changed. I am no longer in the same place. My geography has been changed, but my identity is intact. As opposed to Masha'inkin Oved, who Sheneavant Lonira Velonikar. The Oved, not only has he been geographically exiled, but what? His identity is lost as well. He is unrecognizable. Two different forms of exile that we endure. Ovdim and Nidachim. Nidachim, identity intact, but ultimately we call it geographic disorientation. And an Oved, where my identity is no longer intact. My identity has been compromised. Look at the Rebbe writes, paragraph Beis. As our tzaros intensify now, they're shaving off our beards, so that now we're no longer physically or externally identifiable. Umirov haradipos vaisur makashim inso shef shalashar gam bepimiosam einan nimkarim. And the same way that they shave off our beards and they change us externally, we are changing internally also. We are losing our sense of self. We are losing our identity. Ad shegam ha'ish ba'atzmo oved es atzmo ve'es atzmo eno nikar. Eichirgish atzmo lefishana b'shabes kam b'chol kodum atvila u'b'shas atvila ve'ata nirdas v'nirdam ad she'eno margish kiyim ish Yisrael. So the Rebbe says something amazing. We've been persecuted many, many, many times. But those persecutions, says the Rebbe beforehand, have fallen under the umbrella of nidachim. We've been exiled. We've been able to maintain an intact identity, but our geography changed. The Rebbe says, you know what's scary about our present suffering? Our identity has been compromised. Our very identity itself has been compromised. Our external appearance has been compromised. And as a result, our internal identity has also been compromised as well. A very profound idea. In Chayisara, the Rebbe says that ultimately, pain can break you. Pain could break you. Intense pain could break you. In Parashas Toldos, the Rebbe says, pain can make you lose your sense of self. Intense pain causes you to forget who you are. What's the historical context over here again? Take a look at number four. And this is amazing. The connection between historical events in the ghetto and the Rebbe's sermons is most explicit in his entry for Parshas Toldos, which follows immediately after Chayisara. The use of Aesopian language is evident, with one noted exception. In a rare moment, so skip down actually to the next paragraph. The historical antecedent of the sermon was the Nazi practice of humiliating Warsaw Jews by forcibly shaving their beards, a brutality that occurred with regularity after the city formally capitulated and German soldiers entered on October 1st. Rav Shimon Huberband provides personal testimony to this widespread phenomenon in the initial weeks of the occupation. Two other Jews were seized along with us, one with a black beard and one with a long yellowish beard. A moment later, they grabbed an elegantly dressed young lady and forced her to shear off my beard and Steiner's. The girl wept as she cut our fare for the honor of the Jewish people, which was being disgraced in public by the evil ones. These barbarities were not only done to grown men, but also to children with earlocks. Pais. In Prague, a group of German officers chanced upon 10-year-old Avram Igelnik at the gate of 32 Berkowa Street. They took him away to their headquarters, where they set fire to his earlocks. The young boy was lucky to have been left alive. So you see what's happening over here now in Parshas Toldos? The Rebbe is saying we're losing everything. We've already lost our homes. We've already lost our freedom. We've already lost autonomy. The pain is getting ready to break us. And now we can't even hold on to our identity. Our very identity has been dislodged. Our very identity has been compromised. But then something amazing happens. You see, what's amazing is so many times throughout the Ish Kodesh, there are peaks and valleys. There are drushas when the Rebbe says things like, we're going to break from the pain. There are drushas when the Rebbe says, we're not just nidachim, but we're ovdim. We've lost our very sense of self. But then something amazing happens, which is the Rebbe reaches deep down within himself and pulls something out to create light for those around him. Skipping a number of weeks to Isru Chag of Pesach. This is still the year Tavshin. By now, this is already 1940. But again, this is in the first cycle of Drasha. So amazing. Isru Chag Pesach. Right around now. The Rebbe gives a drasha. What did he say? He says something truly amazing over here. If you take a look at paragraph Beis. Vihine ata. She'ein lanu lo navi v'lo choza. Today, we don't have a prophet, we don't have a seer. Asio sinu ha-mitzvos shugam kin ham-shachas devar Hashem. Hanu devar Hashem ha-mitzvos el olam ha-asio la-asos ha-mitzvos poel la-ham-shichas devar Hashem shala Yeshua gam kin al-olam ha-asio. Debir says something amazing. This is part of a much larger theme, which we're not going to get really very heavily into now, but I'll just tell you it a little bit outside. What the Rebbe says over here is something amazing. We don't have a Navi. We don't have a Chos, we don't have a Seer. We don't have someone who could tell us when Geula is going to come. So what do you do if you don't know when Geula is going to come? The Rebbe says something amazing. You create your own Geula. You create your own redemption. How do you create redemption? Through mitzvos. The Rebbe says that when you engage in spirituality, Spirituality has the ability to create new realities. Spirituality suspends the laws of nature as we see them and is able to create for us an alternate universe of redemption. He goes on. Look what he says. V'umikol shekin ata b'pesach, shamitzvos ma'asios min dvar Hashem shel Yeshuahin. Mitzvos Hashem. So listen to what he writes over here. Skip down to paragraph Gimel. V'efshar b'zeh, he writes, for example, we drink four cups. The four cups correspond ultimately to the four expressions of Geula. What does that mean? You ever think about this? There have been times throughout history, where Jews were not free. And so yet they would still drink the four cups of freedom. What's the idea? The Rebbe posits, because at the end of the day, even if you don't have a life of freedom and redemption, you must try to create it for yourself. And how do you create it for yourself? You create it for yourself through spirituality. What does that mean? What the Rebbe is advancing here is something that you find throughout much Judaic literature from the Holocaust era, which is a human master could enslave everything but your soul. Your body could be enslaved. Even your spirit could be enslaved. Your mind could be enslaved. The one thing that cannot be enslaved is your soul. And therefore, when you have no other form of freedom, the most important thing to do is to exercise your spiritual freedom. Spirituality creates redemption. When you're drinking the four cups, you will experience freedom. When you are learning Torah, you will feel free. When you engage in spiritual service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite the difficulty of all of your other circumstances, you will experience freedom. The Rebbe says something amazing. Paragraph Gimel. He says, Ve'efsher bazeh letaritz kushan odas. He says, this is, okay, we're getting a little bit of Pesach Torah over here. He says, this answers the famous question. What's the famous question? We say, we eat matzah. And when we get to the Rabbi Gamliel section of matzah, what do we say? We eat matzah, why? Al shum shelo hispik betzekam shal avosin lahachmitz. Why do we eat matzah? Because we left Egypt with such haste, that's what? That our ancestors did not have a chance to go ahead and allow the bread to rise. Says the Piagetzna, there's only one problem with that, which is what? How do we start the Seder? Halach ma'anya diachalu avasana be'arad mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction which our ancestors ate in Egypt. So what's the problem? So which one is it? Right? Is matzah the bread of freedom that we ate because we left so quickly that there wasn't time for dough to rise? Or is matzah the bread of affliction that we ate when we were slaves? You know, the Ramban, for example, says that matzah is the bread of affliction. The Egyptians fed us matzah. Why did they feed us matzah? Why? Because it's cheap. Again, don't be fooled by the cost for our shmura matzah, right? Their matzah was cheap, right? It's cheap and it sits in your system for prolonged periods of time. So it satiates for a long time. So think about it. If you're trying to feed millions of slaves, matzah is a wonderful staple. So ask the Piagetzna, I don't understand. So which one is it? Is it the bread of redemption or is it the bread of servitude? And look what he says. He says something absolutely amazing. He says, paragraph Gimel, second line. The Rebbe says something amazing. This is an incredible chiddush. The Rebbe says that when we were in Egypt, we were slaves. We were commanded to eat matzah, even before we left. Why are we commanded to eat matzah in Egypt before we left? Listen to this incredible idea, says the Piagetzna. Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu knew that we were going to leave in such haste that we were going to have to eat matzah. So what did God want us to do while we were slaves in Egypt? He wanted us to eat the bread of freedom while we were still slaves. Have you ever heard of such an explanation of matzah? Says the Piagetzna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to eat matzah while we were still in Egypt. Why? Because God was telling us, you see this bread that you're eating day in and day out? This is going to be the bread that you're going to have to eat when you go free. You're going to go free so quickly that you're not going to have time to allow the bread to rise. And I want you to eat this bread already now. What God was saying to the Jewish people in Egypt is, you have to find a way to experience redemption even in the midst of your servitude. Even in the midst of your difficulties, you must find a way to be free. You must find a way to create a redemptive space for yourself. So in Egypt, it was eat the bread of freedom, even while you are still slaves. Says the Piaget in the paragraph Dalit. He says, Ubasof. Oh, we can say this outside. Say for the Piaget, and says, and this you understand, by the way, he said, we're beginning to come out of the valley. In Chai, Sir, the Piaget, and says, Ibn Shalom, Sir Iminu died because the pain was too great. If Sir Iminu died, we're going to die. In Toldos, he says, Ibn Shalom, I could deal if we are Nidochim. If we are geographically displaced in Golos, we could deal with that. But we're Ovdim. We're losing our entire sense of self. And it's almost like now on Isru Chag Shal Pesach, the Rebbe says, okay, we need to get a handle on this. We cannot lose ourselves in the pain. We cannot lose ourselves in the darkness. We cannot lose ourselves in the abyss. Instead, we know one day redemption will come, but we can't wait for redemption to come to feel redeemed. We must find a way to experience redemption now, even in the midst of this Gehenna, even in the midst of the Warsaw Ghetto, even in the midst of these most horrible circumstances, we must find a way to create redemption. So how do you create redemption? How do you create an atmosphere of redemption? Literally, again, in the pit of Gehenna, the Rebbe posited spirituality. When you daven, when you learn, when you do ches, you know, the Rebbe opened up soup kitchens in the Warsaw Ghetto after the death of his daughter, after the death of his son and his daughter-in-law and his sister and his mother. He opened up soup kitchens. What the Rebbe did is, we're going to create redemption. And how do you create redemption? He taught Torah. He set up a network of clandestine yeshivas and shuls. He opened up a soup kitchen because you can't wait for redemption to come to feel redeemed. Sometimes in life you have to create your own redemption, even in the midst of difficult circumstances. And the way you do that is ultimately through spirituality and chesed. Connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the midst of your difficult circumstances, and you will be able to experience some degree of redemption. And this leads to one last piece. Take a look at number 6. So here again, this is still an Isru Chag of Pesach. I'm sorry, this is actually wrong. This is not Isru Chag Pesach. I mistitled this. This is Parshas Metzora. This was the week after Pesach, still 1940. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. So again, I'm just showing you the progression in the Rebbe's thoughts. The progression in his thoughts. So look at the progression. He says very something amazing. The truth is, we don't understand why God does what he does. And why he commands us to do what he does. Listen to what the Rebbe says. We don't understand the ways of God. But what we do have to believe is that even when things are difficult, some way, somehow, it's all for the good. It's all for the good. And actually something amazing, look at paragraph base. But says the Piyajetzna, look at the times we're in. We're not just physically suffering. We're spiritually suffering as well. And he goes on to lament the closure of yeshivas, the closure of shuls, the closure of their religious infrastructure, the incredible suffering and difficulty, both external and internal. The Rebbe says we're suffering. But look what he says. Skip down to paragraph Dalit. Lachin Roam Batorah. Shagam Shenega Habat in Tmeu Metami Hasa. Mikomakom Asa Barshlichos Litovas Yisrael. So this is amazing. The Rebbe points out this is in Parshas Metzora, the laws of leprosy, of tzaras. So that makes an amazing observation, that if your home was afflicted with tzaras, you came to the Kohen, and what did you say to the Kohen? Kanega nira li babayis. Kanega nira li babayis means, there's something that looks like a nega, like an affliction in my home. What does that mean? What don't I say? I don't go over to the Kohen and I don't say, there's tzaras in my home. Rather, what do I say? There's something that looks like tzaras in my home. What does it mean, says that? But what's the message? The message is that sometimes in life things look really bad. But you have to somehow find within yourself the belief that even that which looks really bad could somehow, some way, still be Latova. Look at paragraph Ches. Vafilu Tamid Chacham. Sheodea. Shenega hirak kinega yomar. Even if a person is very well versed in the halachos concerning Saras, so he knows full well that the affliction that is there is in fact an affliction of Saras, he cannot make a definitive statement that it is Saras. He cannot make a definitive statement like that. Rather, what's the statement he makes? Kinega. It looks like Saras. Mipnei Shaish ba'atzmo ino yochol lomar imhi be'emes nega opega. A person can never know if something is truly bad. Rak shelo nira kenega hayoyochol lomar. Most I could say is, you know what? This looks really bad. It feels really bad. But I have to believe that some way, somehow, there's an underpinning of good. Aval be'emes tov hi liyisrael asher yetiv Hashem imanu. But just like, you know, again, in the case of nega, of tzaras in the home. So there was a good. There was a good. What came out of it? Rashi points out that, remember, again, there was often treasures buried within the walls from the Gentile nations who lived in Eretz Yisrael before we came there. And only when there was tzaras and you had to knock down part of the wall, were you able to find the treasure. Sometimes, again, in the midst of tragedy and suffering, you find treasures that you would have never found before. Each of us has incredible buried treasure inside of us. And sometimes it's only the difficult times in life that pushes us to access that treasure. So to kind of bring this all together, and again, I'm just giving you four little snippets in the Piagetsna, but I think these four snippets kind of create for us an incredible tapestry of Judaic thought in one of the darkest times of our people's history. So, and it begins in the following, a recognition that sometimes validate the pain. The pain feels too great to bear. And the profundity of pain, or the challenge of pain, is that when pain becomes so overwhelming, you lose your sense of self. You lose your very identity. And in that moment when you feel like your identity is being lost, in that moment when you feel that the pain is breaking you, you have a choice. You could lose yourself in the pain. You could lose yourself in the pain. Or you could find a way to create personal redemption. And how do you create personal redemption? How do you do that? Through connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through connection with His Torah, and through connection with the other through Chesed. Sometimes even if you are not living in a state of redemption, you can create your own redemptive moments. This, my friends, is the secret to Jewish survival. The Piagetsna understood that. You don't wait for redemption to come. You create your own redemptive moments through spiritual service, even in the darkest of times. And when you do that, you begin to entertain the possibility that maybe that which looks so horrific and horrible, that which looks so overwhelmingly and totally bad, may still contain buried treasure. There may be some good that may come out of this. There may be some treasure that is found beneath the walls. There may be something I learn about myself or about my people or about our circumstances that I would have never learned without this situation. And I want to suggest that I think this is what we take with us from the Holocaust. This is what we take in the merit of the 6 million Kedoshim. You know, I want to point something out to you, which is, if you look at the opening pasuk in this week's parasha, so it's Parshas Acharei Mos. So the parasha begins in number 7. Vaidaber Shema Moshe Acharei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron Bekarasam Nethnei Hashem Ve'amusu. And Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of Aaron's two sons, when they came close to God and they died. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, number 8, we're not going to go through this, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe, number 8, says, please understand, Nadav and Avihu were incredibly holy. We're incredibly, actually, take a look at number 8. His Mosim Shonadav Avihu, Mahave Bitui the Dagger Ruchanis Nalis Bioser. The Rebbe writes, the death of Nadav and Avihu bespeaks their incredibly exalted spiritual status. Kehem Shech HaKosov Bekarva Samlef Ne Hashem Kilomar. Shebnei Aaron Igi LeKarva Kol Gadol Gidol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yava Katsuma Ad Shegufam Lo Hayu Yochol LaHachilot. Listen to what the Rebbe suggests. The Rebbe says, Nadav and Avihu became so holy and so close to God that their bodies could no longer contain their soul. They died because their souls were so infused with holiness that the physical shell of the body could not contain that neshama. Incredible. The death of Nadav and Avihu represents the death of righteous, innocent people. Sometimes a reason we can't comprehend. But the Lubavitcher makes such an amazing observation. He says, what does the Pasuk say? Vayidaber Shem al Moshe, acharei mos shnei b'nei Aaron. God continues to speak to Moshe, even acharei mos. You know what the power of the Jewish people is? It's not just survival. Anyone could survive. We thrive. Then even in the aftermath of acharei mos, right? Even acharei mos, even after the death of so many pure and innocent souls, even after the death, ultimately, again, of 6 million kedoshim, and so many karbanos, so many Jewish offerings since that time. It didn't end in 1945. It goes on to this very day. After all of that, acharei mos, shnei b'nei Aaron, after the death of the righteous that we witness over and over and over again, Klal Yisrael continues. But how does that happen? How does that continuity occur? Isn't the pain too much to bear? Don't we feel sometimes like we're ovdim? And our power of our people is the ability to create our own redemptive moments. The power of our people, the power of our people, ultimately, again, is on our ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to His Torah, to His mitzvos, and to one another, and to create redemptive moments. That's the job of the Jew. We have the great privilege to learn the Piagetzna's Torah to this very day, because he created redemptive moments in the pit of hell, literally again in the midst of all of that unspeakable darkness. And that's what we take with us. We don't experience what the Piagetzna experiences, but we all have our own challenges. Now, I often say, sometimes when a person is going through difficult times, well-meaning people try to contextualize your suffering. You know, there are children starving in Africa. I know there are children starving in Africa. Nebuch. But that doesn't help me. My problems are still my problems. But I think what we get from the Piagetzna and so many of the Kedoshim from those years of fury is how do we deal with difficult circumstances in life? The Piagetzna is telling us how to approach life. When you find yourself in the midst of darkness and despair, create your own moments of redemption. Don't lose yourself in the darkness. Don't wallow in self-pity. Don't lose yourself in the pain. But create your own moments of redemption through connection with the spiritual, through connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through connection with your fellow Jew. And so yes, we remember, and yes, we vow never to forget, but we have a much more sacred task. Our sacred task is to learn and to inculcate the lessons of these 6 million kedoshim in our own lives. To take the lessons of a man like the Piagetzna. And by the way, the Piagetzna is just one. Don't think he's the only one. There are so many. And I want to just tell you something. Even those who did not retain their Yiddishkeit after the war. Many people left God after the war, and we are no one to stand in judgment of them. Even those people who had the courage to go forward and rebuild families. Do you know what it means to rebuild a family in the aftermath of losing everything? Of seeing unspeakable horror? No, we don't know because we haven't seen it. But to have the courage to get out of bed the next morning, to have the courage to rebuild, to have the courage to be productive, to have the courage to start a business, to have the courage to have a catch with your kids, to have the courage to be normal, to have the courage to smile. That's incredible. Those are the lessons we learn. Not forgetting, that's obvious. Remembering, that's obvious. A meaningful expression is not lighting candles. That's beautiful also, that's a memorial. But the most meaningful aliyah that we could give to these neshamos is to tell them, you inspire us. We learn from you. Because each of you showed us how to navigate the tumultuous straits of life in different ways. Some with a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, others just with having the courage to live. We should be zochem yirtzeh Hashem to internalize these lessons of the Esh Kodesh, of the Piagetzna. We should be zochem yirtzeh Hashem that as we encounter our own challenges, to draw back on the memory of those who lived through this darkest time, to see their courage, to see their poise, to see their bravery, to see how spirituality was their lodestar, was their guiding light, to help them through the most difficult and overwhelming circumstances. We should be inspired by their derech. We should take, ultimately, again, a cue from the way they navigated the tumultuous circumstances. And in Meretz Hashem, we should find the chizuk to make it through our challenges as well. And in that zechus, may we, in Meretz Hashem, give an aliyah to the neshamas of the 6 million gedoshim, to give a neshama to the piyajetzna, to give a neshama to the beautiful men, women, and children who are swept up in the storms of Nazi fury. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally see fit to bring the Mashiach, to bring in the Geula, when in Meretz Hashem, there'll be a Tchias HaMesim, there'll be a resurrection of the dead, and our family and our nation will once again be whole.